Document imaging of medical records, scheduling packet for doctor's dictation, like when they perform a procedure, and then when they get done, they have to describe what happened, the amount of medicine they used, what have you. This
hey, Dad,
is what we're doing.
Did you get my computer okay?
We will in a bit, okay? Hey, you guys are smashing a dog in the door. That'll be a good one for the yelping. My previous job was working with a medical billing software, so mm-hmm. I've been around doctors 15 or 20 years. I went to work for a medical manager corporation, which is WebMD. I worked for them for quite some time.
Do you ever lose sleep over the fact that you're relying on this idea?
Oh yeah, it was a big step. It was the biggest one to convince was my wife. You know, it was you know, that walking away from a job, guaranteed money, shooting craps, throwing the dice out there, and saying, "Oh,
right.
you know, it's either gonna go or it's not
right.
gonna go." And basically, what I put to the wife, I'm like, "You know, I can, you know, yeah, I do make decent money now, but I think I can do more."
How did the whole geocaching thing get started? Because that was only a few weeks ago.
Right. It was February 7th, actually. Me and my buddy John, who you met the other day when we went geocaching, we were down at Unger Park eating lunch, stopped by Subway, and we're sitting down there, and a group of guys pulled up in a car, started walking up, and they had GPSs in their hands, and I had no idea really what was going on. I asked John, I was like, you know, what are they doing? And he was like, I think this call is geocaching. What is that? I said, never heard of it. And they proceeded to watch the guys. They were looking for one that was hidden there in the pavilions, what it appeared to be. After they found it, we sat there and talked to them about it for a little bit and what was going on. And after that, I went over and bought my GPS and been doing it ever since. So
you didn't hesitate as soon as you saw this interesting thing that may have tied to technology.
Right.
You said, I'm going to go right out and
yeah, that's
get into this.
That and then figuring, like you said, I knew that there was walking and that involved, and we all need to, you know, sit behind a desk for over so many years, and the weight keeps piling on and that, and you always tell yourself, I'm going to go out and walk, and then just walk down the street 100 yards, turn around and come back, and you're done. This way, like I said, I can't even imagine how many miles I've covered already on foot, and basically downloading the pocket queries from geocaching.com, and then just I've got them right now in a 30-mile radius. First one I found was over here by Alan Dave right here at Upper Booter, very first one.
Yeah, that's, less than a mile.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I can walk to it here from my house. I mean, which I did. After I got the GPS, got a charge, kind of didn't even really know how to work it very well. I said, I got to go show that there was one there, so I walked across the street, and it was a huge drop-off down there. So I was like, wow. But, yeah, it was, and then, like I said, I've just been hooked ever since, and done it pretty much so just about every day. Like, the other day when we met you, it was cold, and too cold to fly, so we decided we were going to go out and do some caching.
So your friend John had known about this geocaching before?
Right. He'd said he'd done it once or twice before with his brother, and he'd never mentioned to me. That's what I had told him about, punched him in the gut, and said, you know, he never told me anything about this. You know, and like I said, that was the first I ever heard of geocaching. My wife still doesn't understand. He's still trying to explain to her. She wanted to go out over the weekend. It was too cold. She's a fair weather person, so...
Right.
I told her, I said, when it warms up, I'll show her what exactly it is.
How about the rest of your family?
I mentioned it to my daughter, and she was kind of like, you know, is there money involved? And I was like,
you mean, do I get money involved, or does it cost money?
No, you're not going to make any money off of it.
When you say high-tech treasure hunt, sometimes people think, oh, there's something where there's a... I can
pick
it up, and there's money I can.
Yeah, that's the first one my wife thought. She's like, you know what, it's like a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow or what? It's like, no.
No, then everybody would be into it.
Yeah, then you really have the people really trying for the first to find. I've mentioned it to a couple people in there. Everybody's kind of like, you know,
what's the point?
Yeah, you know, they're like, you know, what do you do? Well, you know, it's exercise, and it's a challenge. I mean, like, so it's probably been four or five parks that I've been to now that I had no idea were there. And it's just amazing. So I was like, wow. Safecracker one. And that was, another cold morning. Sat there for about, and John went with me, and we were probably 20 or 30 minutes.
Mm.
And we tried everything. John had his shoelaces off at one point, tried to figure out how to pull it out and everything else. And I was trying to remember what I read off of the internet and just getting ready to give up. And John went to set it back down and twisted the things a little bit more, and it popped right out. And it was like, that's what we found. And I found myself, and I think John's the same way, that we trying to overthink things. You know, you're thinking, you know, it's like they're making it more difficult than what it really is.
Do you think that you might participate in some of the group hunts?
Yeah, I've been watching for that. I've actually signed up for MOGA. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And that's coming up.
Are you trained for that?
Yeah, well, I was telling John, and I didn't ask John.
30-some days away.
I told John, I said, you know, we got to start, you know. And I said, I don't know. He goes, well, what is it about? I said, well, it's hide stuff, and you have to go find it. And
yeah.
He was like, well, let's find out where they're at right now. I said, I don't think they're hidden yet. Do my pocket queries and then upload it, play it. Well, I said, you know, what if you read the instructions? And I'm like, yeah, I'm a guy. I don't read instructions.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'll figure this thing out as I go. That's with the 600. I learned the... had to calibrate the compass on there.
Do you have to calibrate it like the E-Trex where every time you change the battery, you got to spin around in a circle?
That's what this one
times.
Does. And it didn't say how often you have to do it. I know they say on the, it also has that barometric altimeter
I've got that one.
And it really doesn't, I mean, I haven't seen that it's that accurate compared to what the satellite's showing.
As far as altitude?
Right, the altitude.
Yeah.
It works for about 20 or 30 minutes. It seems to be pretty accurate with what you're reading off of the satellite. And then after that, it just starts going all. I've noticed, like, if you leave it in the car and it gets warmer in there, and it really throws it off. I've been signing logbooks, and every once in a while I'm leaving a coin here or something like that. We've got, you know, I've put a couple different things in there. But, yeah, usually just sign the logbook is the big thing. Look and see what's in there. And I always like to stop and sit there and read what other people have written.
Right. You've already thought about putting out your own cash.
Yes.
As well.
That's my working on trying to figure out where, you know, they say not that you don't want to be real close to somebody else's. So every time we think of a good place, then
it's already cash.
Yeah, somebody's, you know, there's somebody's like, oh, well, all right. So I just keep looking and figure something out. I'm sure there'll be at some point it'll come up. And I've been reading about the travel bugs. I like to do that and just see where they go, what happens with that. I actually found a couple. I haven't taken them out because didn't understand that much about them yet. I saw the one where they were trying to get it to all the different football stadiums in America. So I didn't know whether, you know, you take it out at that point, move it to the next, you know, move it to one that's closer to a stadium somewhere or what. So I just left it there. Looking forward to meeting a lot of new people. That's what I like. I'm a people person.
Well, Mike, I appreciate you taking the time out to let us know what it's like to be fresh into the whole hobby. Thanks
appreciate
a lot.
It. Okay, thanks.
Do you have like a room in your basement where you just maintain all your...
I have one downstairs that's filled with planes right now. So I said the other day that I got it because I can't even work in there anymore. Everybody seems to start off small and I got bigger and bigger. Now I've got one that's sitting out in the garage. It's got a 100-inch wingspan. I've got another one's got a 95-inch wingspan. Another one's got a 110-inch wingspan. So
what's the challenge then as far as how big it is? I mean, smaller one and easy to control, but bigger ones?
Bigger ones are much easier to fly.
Okay.
It's just a matter of how much money you want to spend. The bigger they are, of course, the more it costs. And this is one we were telling you about. Come out and fly sometime. You couldn't crash this thing if you tried. I mean, you would literally have to push the stick and point the nose at the ground and hold it there, because as soon as you let off of the stick, this plane, it'll immediately just recover from the dive on its own and come back out. A lot of wing area, lots of lift. There's 1,200, 1,300 square inches of lifting area on that wing. It's a flat bottom wing, which makes even more lift. It's got a bunch of dihedral. The wing is like this rather than straight flat out, so which makes it real stable.
Yeah.
You would have to fall asleep, die of a heart attack, something, in order to get that thing to crash.
Now, were you out there when they were running the jets during the fly-in?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what I keep wanting to go there, but, I mean, it's even more money. I'm into the helicopters, too. Don't do those as much because they... You want to talk about pricey. And when you wreck one of those, it's not like a plane. You crash a plane, you break a few pieces of balsa, and usually you can put it back together. It's a little bit of glue and whatever. A helicopter does what we call chicken dance. When it hits the ground, it will sit there and literally
flop
itself
around
to death. I mean, it breaks everything.
Sometime last year, they had a helicopter flying.
Yes, it's the first weekend of June every
year. I mean, they were good because right away, they just put them in the computer. Did you do them upside down?
Yeah, they're upside down. They're cutting grass with them. I mean, I was more into the scale, and that's where it even got more expensive. The helicopter airframe itself, before you put servos in it, an engine on it, or anything, was about $3,000 just for the airframe. These were big ones. The helicopter was as long as that right there, with a rotor disc that was almost 7 feet. Got a big gasoline motor on it, weighed about 30 pounds. Flew those for a while and crashed the one. I had a some kind of radio glitch or something went wrong with it. It dove into the ground. And I got a friend of mine that met through doing the web pages and actually helped him get a radio control helicopter for him. So, and I went up there to visit with him for a while. He's into the turbine helicopter, jet engine on a helicopter. Mm-hmm. And so I was flying that, and I was about this close, you know, and I was like, wow, that is just cool. And then I thought, well, you got $3,000 in an airframe, and you got another $3,000 in the engine. I'm like, you got $10,000. Then I was putting the scale fuselages on there too, fiberglass fuselages, paint them all up where they look like the real thing, doors on mine. And
right, you want that for display. You don't want to fly that once.
Well,
and then
yeah, they do, and that's what I had. I flew it the one time. He actually built an X-1. They scaled them, took pictures off the internet, scaled them down, and built a carry plane for it, and actually launches a rocket with a rocket
cool.
on it. He's flown it quite a few times. It's beautiful to watch. When he touches it off with this engine, and all of a sudden you see it fall off the plane. They hit the release on it. That thing fires off, and then he flies it around for, it's usually about a minute and a half before it comes down.
When do you tell yourself, it's all like, okay, I can do this, I'm not going to piss anybody off?
That you probably will always do. There's always going to be somebody that complains, and that's our biggest thing we run from. I mean, and this, if you do something one time or once a month at a place, you're probably not going to get people complaining. But like at Booter and one of our private fields, if you do it every day, continually, then that's what gets people aggravated. So we're always looking for a place that we can go, or somewhere where the kids can go and play. Like there's a playground close by, and then we can fly while they.
But you wouldn't have any problem going down to Castlewood in an open area?
No, we fly our little electric ones down there at Castlewood all the time. Where the playgrounds are at Johnson the other day, we got a traffic jam. The one day, I mean, that people were just stopping, pulling over. The fan, they're like, "Oh my God!" You know,
they've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, it's like, I'm like, Jesus, you know, it's not that hard. We get people down there all the time. Like, but I've got the trainer down there at the field, and people come down there and sit all the time and watch down here at Booter. Yeah. And I always go out there and grab the guy and say, "Hey, come on over here. I'm gonna let you fly." "Oh no!" I'm like, "No, really." I mean, it's not. Everybody's like, "Oh no, it's really hard." I said, "No, it's really not at all."
Yeah.
I said, you know, there's really nothing to it. I mean, if you can walk down the street, you shouldn't be able to fly one of these things.
Yeah, and if you played video games, you know how to use a joystick, you have an idea.
Right. The hand-eye coordination. As everybody gets confused when the plane's coming at them, you know, they're like, well, how do you do it? I said, it's really the simplest way, and it's the guys that I've taught, and I've probably trained 40 or 50 guys now, and I always have them bring it towards them, and I said, whatever wing is low, that's where you push your left stick, push the stick towards the lower wing.
Mm-hmm.
When it's coming at you, when it's going away, everybody can fix that.
Right.
Oh, it's tilting down this way, so I need to bring it over this way. When it's coming towards them, they get all backwards. I said, whatever, if a plane's coming towards you, whatever wing is low, push the stick towards the low wing. Always put the stick under the low wing. And I get it.
Wow.
I said, oh, let's just park there. I said, no, I said, that's a good way to get people off, and then
when
you walk down between houses, a guy or two guys park out front, walk down with boxes in their hands.
I'm all against the trespass on private property.
Yeah, that's what I told him. I was like, no, he's, you know, it's like, no, we'll go around and do it the way they want us to do it. So
yeah, not to say that I haven't, but
yeah, I mean
I'm only 15 feet away.
Well, actually,
just
we've had a couple. That's what John's like. He's like, oh my gosh, you know, we're 59 feet away from it here, you know, and I'm like, look, man, this is somebody's backyard.
Right, and what's the point, the journey or, you know, how close can you get to it?
Yeah, that's what I told him. I said, look, we've proven we can get real close to it, now we need to go back around over to, you know, do it the right way.
Yeah. All right.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, this will be on the web in a few days.
Okay.
This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.